Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6. Bringing the island's community together.
Good evening and welcome to Vectis Movies, the Vectis Radio Movie Review Show with me, Tosin, who shall be your host in the next hour. With me tonight are Sharon.
Hello.
And Sean.
Hiya.
Who will also be going through what we've seen in the cinema in the last week, or actually the last 2 weeks, what's good, what's not, and all that. I'm sorry that we didn't have a show last week. It got called off quite last minute because I ended up, and this is just a bit of a humble brag, I ended up in London filming a documentary with somebody who'd played with, like, you know, Elton John and The Who, Pete Townsend and all that kind of stuff. And I was just sort of like telling stories about...
Too good to miss.
Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't give that up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, also I was getting paid. But
yeah, but...
But no, it was crazy. Some of the stories that she had, because this woman is just a... She blew my mind.
Was she a backing singer or a musician?
She's a percussionist.
She's
a percussionist, and she's known for like coming up with all these sort of soundscapes and everything like that. And she builds this massive rig that's just sort of like all but things random. And she even has like children's toys that she uses to make noises when she's doing the whole thing. And she had two children while on tour. Like, she was telling the story about how she was on a tour with Elton John, and they had like a week long break between the European leg of the tour and the American leg of the tour, and she went off, had the kid, grabbed the kid when the kid was a week old, went back on tour.
Wow. That takes something. It's amazing the people that are out there. I met a guy called Doc Freeman, who played, he was like, call them session musicians, I think.
He played with
all sorts of people, you know, real famous people. I think he probably played with Elton John and things like that, but he had written the music to Casualty, you know, the TV program. And he said that he just lives off the royalties of that because it gets played everywhere. It gets played in Australia and all the reruns. And every time that bit of music gets played, he gets a bit of the royalties. So he gets like a few bob. But yeah, he moved to Lymington, actually. He sort of moved down to Lymington. And he also did, there was a film, I don't know if you might not remember this, Sharon, but Tripods.
Yes, I remember the tripods.
And he actually wrote the theme tune to this like 70s.
Late 70s science fiction. Yeah. Young adult.
It used to be on like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, didn't it? Yeah, so he wrote
this
the music
alien
for that
invasion.
As well. And I found this big, there used to be things called 8-track cartridges.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know the things? I mean, great big beastie things. And I saw that and it was like tripods or something. I'm like, whoa, did you? He goes, yeah, I wrote music to that. And that's how we got into a conversation. So, yeah.
Oh, no, that's absolutely crazy, because it's funny. That's the kind of thing you want to do. It's the kind of thing you want to do. You want to be able to do one thing like that and then just sort of pay for it for like the rest of your life. Just sit back and be like, yeah, I'm just going to sit here and count my money.
That's about the boy, wasn't it? That was the Hugh Grant film.
His
dad had written a Christmas number one. Right. And he basically, his dad lived off of it and then he inherited the rights. And he never had to work. It was just the royalties.
All you need is one hit. I mean, you imagine those Christmas hits. One Christmas hit, that's made for life.
That's why everybody keeps trying to write one. Everyone keeps trying to write a Christmas hit, because you know every year you're going to be earning money.
That's it. But I mean, trouble is, from a personal point of view, I get a bit fed up with them, actually.
Christmas.
When they constantly play it all the time.
The same ones.
Yeah.
You want a new classic, don't you, to think, okay, add one to the repertoire so that it's sort of an extra one, so
it pushes
the one on repeat a bit further back down the list.
It might be a bit early in the year. I mean, the sun's still out and it's actually quite hot. It might be a bit early in the year to be talking about Christmas, but I actually reckon that people are just too cynical nowadays to actually write a proper Christmas number one. Because I think, if you think about all the Christmas number ones, they are sort of unabashed, unashamed, massive.
They're
sort
just
of
like, joyful, aren't they?
Joyful things. Think about, like, you know, Nobby Styles going, it's Christmas!
Nobby Styles, Noddy Holder, you mean?
Noddy Holder, that's the one.
Nobby Styles, hold the cup aloft.
You know, I said that and I thought, I thought, that's the wrong guy.
That's the wrong guy.
might be football on the brain. But I think about him doing that, and I just can't think of anybody doing it, because I think nowadays when people do Christmas albums, it's because they're trying to get that hit.
That will pay for their retirement.
Yeah, so it's dope. So anyway, never mind. But now, we've done our usual thing. That was the section of the show for you people who do not like films. We talk about something that's totally unrelated to films whatsoever. And now we're going to go deep into the films. And this week we have Ocean's 8, which we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking Ocean's 8, the female-led starring I'm not even sure whether I'm going to call it a reboot or a sequel or anything like that. It's just part of the franchise. It's part of the Oceans franchise. But we're going to be talking about that. Last week, we're going to talk a little bit about the Grey Pound or the Silver Dollar.
Silver Dollar,
which is
this
phenomenon that we found with film that has, ever since the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel came out, that people started realizing, oh my God.
They've recognized, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. People who are like, you know, in their 70s and stuff. They actually want stories that are told about them.
They still go to the pictures.
Yeah. We can make money.
The afternoon matinees. I bet that's where they make lots of money.
Well, yeah.
Because quite often when
if I've
been to the cinema of an evening and I'm going to watch an evening film, and sort of obviously a film that's been shown in the afternoon, there's like loads of...
They're all piling out.
Apparently... last night there was a couple of ladies, they went to see
the book club
and it broke down, so they were getting their money back on the thing. They said we were sat there for an hour. They weren't very pleased. Bless them. So as I mentioned to you, I did feel for you at the time, ladies.
Yeah, yes. Oh, that's terrible.
That's annoying, because that's just not right.
I mean, I don't mean to stereotype anybody, but I'd imagine that for them was like a thing. It was like an outing. And it's, that is sad. That is sad. Fix it, cinemas, fix it. But you mentioned the book club, and so we were going to talk about The Grey Pound, and we're going to talk about two films that were released, which is Edie and The Book Club, that are smack bang in that whole Grey Pound, Silver Dollar way, where you're saying, let's take all the people who are later on in life and let's make them smack bang the center of their own movies. And I think, Sharon, you said you saw another film that we spoke about last week.
Yes, I caught up with it's only been out 2 weeks, Jurassic World,
Fallen Kingdom.
Yep. Though I must admit, I am a bit naughty. I didn't stay for the end credit scene, so I looked it up on YouTube.
There's an end credit scene?
Yeah, there was.
I don't remember that. I stayed. Okay, never mind. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that off air.
It was obviously earth shattering.
And we also have Hereditary.
Hereditary, yes.
Which everybody's talking about as like, oh, it's like a must see. You got to go see this film. There's Hereditary, and there's a special film.
There's a special film.
That's Sharon and I.
Yes, you went to a mystery. Was it what they call it? A secret screening or mystery?
It was
screening?
A secret screening.
Yeah. They don't tell you what you're going to see until you get there, do they?
You do not have a clue what you're going to see.
That fills me with terror.
Okay, no, don't worry. All will be revealed later on in the show. All will be revealed later on in the show. But first of all, let's crack on and let's talk about Ocean's 8. So now, Ocean's 11. This is the first time everybody ever heard about Ocean's 11. It was a Rat Pack movie starring Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin. And it was essentially about these guys who were going to rob... Three casinos in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it was Caesar's Palace and something else, wasn't it? Yeah. It was all about the big...
Yeah, it was about the big ones.
Las Vegas casinos.
Yeah, and this got remade. It got remade in the noughties, I think.
Noughties.
With Steven Soderbergh remade it with George Clooney in the Frank Sinatra role. He had Brad Pitt, Matt Damon. I had the 11, and the 11 was bulked out with this cast. And it was just sort of like, you know, oh, great. It was a peppy movie. It was fun. It was bouncy. It was just like, it was cool. It was cool, effortless stuff. They made a sequel, Ocean's 12, which I frankly think is a mess of a film. I think they try some things in it, but I just think it's an absolute mess of a film.
Yeah, they enjoyed making it, I think, more than we enjoyed watching it.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw that film. I watched that film and I thought that, oh my God, these people, you can see these people having a lot of fun. You can see that they're having a lot of fun, but I don't think it's translating to us. Like, the people making the film had a lot more fun making it than the people who have to watch it.
Yeah.
So it was crazy. Then they came up with Ocean's 13, which ended up being kind of like, I felt it was a bit of a return to form. It was a bit more like the Ocean's 11 and all. But after that, it's sort of gone, and it was kind of like, that was a trilogy. It's over. It's done with. And then they started talking about doing another Ocean's movie. And this time, everything you were hearing about was that it's going to be an all-female crew trying to pull off a heist. And sure enough, we had a couple of years back, we had the Ghostbusters movie when that was sort of brought back, and it was an all-female crew. And they made it was an all-female crew, and there was a whole bunch of stuff. There was a whole bunch of people who were going online and were just yelling and screaming and quite frankly, being really, really horrible. And this main problem seemed to be the fact that they were women in a film.
Yeah, because I saw that film and I didn't think it was that bad.
I thought it was good.
Why are you ripping this apart? Yeah, the girls, Ghostbusters.
I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was funny and silly.
I don't like the 80s version. it's okay, but I don't... Because I think I've said this before, that I came when I was that age. I looked at it because I was in my 20s. Looked at it as a children's film and it really didn't... I mean, it was okay. I didn't get it, but I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, yes. I really enjoyed the new Ghostbusters. I mean, it had some problems, but I really enjoyed the new Ghostbusters. And now we have Ocean's 8. And with Ocean's 8, this is a film that I actually think I'm just kind of like... Because I like the Ocean's movies, apart from Ocean's 12, which I think is, as I say, I think is a mess.
Did you like the original?
I've never seen the original. I've never seen the Frank Sinatra version. The George Clooney version, I just love that film. I think it's a kind of film that you can put on, and it just flows all the way through. Right? It flows all the way through from beginning to end. The thing just sort of bounces along and everything like that. You go, oh, what's going to happen? And when they come up with a plan, and when they show how the plan's going to work and all that, it just flows. And I really, really, really love Ocean's 11, the George Clooney version. And so with Ocean's 8, I was like, oh, well... My main thing was, I just wanted them to do a good film. I wanted them to make a good film. I know that some people might think, oh, they're trying to make a point and about what's going on in Hollywood at the moment and about the Time's Up movement and the Me Too movement. And but I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Some people might see it as that, but for me, I just hope that you make a good film. And so that was my hope. Sean, what did you think when you saw this film?
Oh, when I saw this film, okay. Yeah, I mean, for me, I enjoyed this film. I mean, normally with my plot holes and everything like that, I mean, it was very slick and everything was too convenient. But having said that, you know, and it was just lucky that certain people in certain place at the time all could get jobs or could do stuff or could do this, you know, and it just all worked out rather well, without too many hitches.
Yeah.
But it was still enjoyable if you looked at it as it was a nice caper movie. And I mean, I really like Kate Blanchett in this.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think that it was her to start with.
Yeah.
So, and I think Kate Blanchett is an absolutely terrific actress.
She doesn't have a tell, does she? Because some people have a tell where they do the same things in every film.
Like,
She seems to be the part she's playing, doesn't she?
She's like totally different people.
Yeah.
She is, you know, and that was totally different to anything I'd seen her in before. So it was a whole new character, you know, with the...
And she's got the sharp bob, hasn't she?
She's got the sharp bob,
mm-hmm. Blonde bob.
So, okay, let's just have a little bit of a... So how we get into this story is when the film kicks off, you're introduced to a character played by Sandra Bullock called Debbie Ocean. So same last name as the George Clooney character, Danny Ocean. And she sits in front of a parole board. And you can see she's wearing like the orange prison jumpsuit and everything. And she's talking about why she should be let out of jail and how she's learned her lesson and all that kind of stuff. And she gets let out of jail. And even before she leaves the jail, you already see that she's just kind of like, yeah, I've been working on that speech for 5 years. I knew exactly what I was going to say. Knew how I was going to do this whole thing. And she walks out. She walks out and pretty much she's already planned this thing that she's going to do. Then she starts putting together a team that she believes is going to help her, that she needs to pull off this this heist that she has in mind. And that includes Kate Blanchett, who plays a character called Lou. It includes Helena Bonham Carter, who is this eccentric Irish sort of like fashion designer.
Because she's the one I was interested in, because I love Helena Bonham Carter. I don't know how you say it. It's
Helena Bonham Carter. I don't know.
Yeah. Her. But I've always admired her, so I was thinking, oh, good, I'd watch it just because she's in it.
Yeah, she's in, I think, Sarah Paulson. Sarah Paulson is quite funny because she plays the fence, who is the person who, like, essentially, when they steal stuff, the person who gets rid of it in a way that is not traceable. She's done this, but she's now has two children. She lives in the suburbs, but you can see that there's still these elements that shows that she can't quite leave her old life behind and all that. You have Sarah Paulson's in. Mindy Kaling is there as a jeweler who is lives with her parents and works in the family business and just is like, I just want to get away from here. You have Aquafina who plays.
Oh, that's how you say it. Because I was looking at that name, I thought, is it Aquafina? What a strange name!
It's Aquafina.
Aquafina. Well, that's better than Aquafina, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit less awkward.
Yeah, true. Although she is a bit. And they have Rihanna, who plays a character called Nineball, who's the hacker. And you have all these different things, and so it follows the template of an Ocean's movie. Put the team together, explain what the job is. How are we going to do the job? Explain how difficult this job is going to be. And the whole idea is that they're trying to steal a necklace around the neck of someone who's going to be at the Met Ball. But there's a whole complicated thing. There's this necklace that has been in a vault for 50 years and Cartier haven't let it go out to anybody. So how are they going to get it out of the vault? And they in a very Ocean's way, because the whole idea is that Sandra Bullock is George Clooney's sister. She's Danny Ocean's sister. And there's a line where she goes, like, where someone goes, is everybody in the family like this? She's like, yeah, pretty much everybody. Oh, apart from my Aunt Ida. Yeah, she's a homemaker. But saying that all of them in the family, they're just crooks and they just sort of dream up all these crazy schemes and all. And it's, and I think it moves along. It's got a really, it, I don't think, it's not as peppy or as jump, or as, is it doesn't flow as much, and it's not as funky as the Ocean's 11, because even the music, I think they kind of like allude to the kind of music of Ocean's 11 even in that, but it doesn't quite do it. I don't think, and I feel like the pace is a little slower and it doesn't quite have that sort of like Soderbergh cool.
That's it, yeah.
It doesn't have the Soderbergh detached cool about it, so which I missed a little bit. But at the same time, I actually have to admit, I thought it was brilliant seeing women on the screen,
yeah,
pulling stuff up, and it wasn't about, it wasn't totally about a man. It wasn't, it was just seeing them being badass. Yeah, I absolutely loved
they were, and I think the men in it were seen as a bit dippy almost, weren't they?
Yeah,
they were,
it was like,
you know, or a bit eye candy. There's like, you know, that type of stuff. Yeah. So it was like,
I thought James Corden, was James Corden?
Yeah, he's not the eye candy.
Some people do like the James Corden.
Yes.
Some people really, really do like the James Corden.
I quite liked his part, but in the trailer, when I saw the trailer and you see the little bit of him, I thought, oh, I don't know.
When you see the trailer, it's totally different to what he actually is in the film.
Yeah. So he's good in this.
Yeah.
So.
I think it's good. I think the part is quite good. Although I did think, remember the film Logan Lucky?
Oh, Logan Lucky, yeah.
Which was made by Steven Soderbergh. I did feel like Ocean's 8 almost follows Logan Lucky, almost sort of like beat for beat. Even like the bit after the heist is very Logan Lucky. And I was watching, I was going, this is, well, Steven Soderbergh was an executive producer, but still was. But I think the ladies,
yeah,
they are brilliant. They are absolutely brilliant. I think Sandra Bullock, I haven't seen her lead a film for a while, and it's a joy.
She seems to have been off our screens for a bit, hasn't she?
Yeah. It's a joy to have Sandra Bullock back. She is brilliant in this film. As you said, Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, all the characters, I think, are great in this movie, because sometimes there can be one that's even Helena Bonham Carter. There you go. I really like her in this as well. She's great.
One of the first times you see her, she sat in a corner eating Nutella out of a jar.
just
crying to herself eating Nutella out of a jar. So I think it's a good addition to the franchise. It didn't feel like a money grab. It didn't feel like it was just sort of like, well, yeah, we're just going to put Oceans because people know that we're going to make them all women and give us your money. It didn't feel like that. It actually felt like they were saying something with the film. I felt like there was a reason for this film to exist. And there's a scene towards the end where they're all decked up in all these dresses. And they're walking down the stairs together. And I was just kind of looking at them going, man, I love these women. These women are awesome.
And even there's a slight little twist in it, isn't there? There's a slight little twist, which I really liked. And I actually did not... So I didn't see it coming.
Well, the thing is, if you listen to the podcast, which you can actually listen to now, you can even find this podcast on iTunes if you wanted to. Like, if you can't listen to the show live, you want to listen back to it, anything. You notice that when we mention all the people, we mention all the names of people, and the eagle-eyed of you would have noticed that we only mentioned seven names. So, who is the eight? And I think it's, well, from the word go, I thought it was pretty obvious who the eight was.
Yeah, I did.
From the poster, I thought it was pretty obvious who the eight was. But like, they kept doing all these things and everything like that to sort of like, oh, da, 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 da. But Anne Hathaway plays the person who they're trying to steal from. So she essentially has the Andy Garcia kind of role, because she's hosting the New York Met Gala, and they're trying to get this thing from around her neck, which is... it's a good film. It's a good, fun film. I think it probably doesn't have anything as iconic as in the Ocean's 11, the bit where they're all standing in front of the Bellagio looking at the fountain, which I think is just a beautiful scene. It doesn't quite have anything like that as a payoff, but I like the way they've done it, and the way they've done it is kind of like there's more to come. I feel like there could have been more. It could have been funkier. It could have been peppier. It could have been jazz. That's the word I'm looking for, jazzier.
Jazzier. Yeah, yeah, it's a good point, really.
Yeah, it could have been jazzier. And I agree with you that there doesn't really seem to be any peril in the film.
No.
It's like at no point do you feel as if the plan, it's not a spoiler to say the plan goes off without a hitch. There is like nothing. It's not like the other ones where something goes wrong, or like a Tom Cruise movie where it's like, oh my God, he dropped a pen.
Yeah.
Nothing like, I think the plan just, it just goes off way too smoothly.
It does, yeah. That was the one thing that I would have said with my criticisms, you know, of movies. It just was like, oh wow.
Yeah.
You know, from the whole thing, really, it was just like, wow, surely. There was one bit in particular where I thought, well, would someone not see that? It's like... obvious. What's gonna happen?
I just think it was a bit too slick. I think in the film was just a bit too slick, and a little bit of grit to the slickness would have been nice, just to sort of like, you know, like a wrench in the gears. And there isn't really one. It's just like the perfect plan, and it just totally goes perfectly. All right, so we're gonna be back. And okay, first of all, how many stars would you give it?
I'll give it a 3-star.
I'll give it a 3 as well. Cool. I'll give it a 3. I think it's enjoyable. Could have been more. I was going to say, and the cameos.
The
cameos in this film that show that it's in the same world as the Ocean's 11, 12, 13 movies are great. I love them, and they're not what you expect. But we're going to go away for some ad break, and then we shall be back after the messages to talk about. Let's see, what are we going to talk about?
Well, we've got lots to talk about.
We'll probably go book club. But anyway, yeah, we'll be back soon.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
Olive White Studio Glass at Arrowton Barnes, Scarve Village, is one of the leading British glassmaking studios and has a reputation worldwide. The studio is open 7 days a week, and you can come and watch master glassmaker Timothy Harris create his amazing designs. A visit to Isle of Wight Studio Glass also offers an opportunity to purchase a piece of glass that you will treasure for always. You can also buy online at Isle of whitestudioglass.co.uk or call us on 522-339.
Island Valleton is the Isle of Wight's most recommended mobile service. Check out their reviews on Yale.com. Car valets from just £30. Call Keith or Darren on 0776 408 339, or check online for Island Valleton at Yale.com, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram for photographs and customer reviews. Island Valleton, a perfect job every time. Do you suspect there may be some bullying going on within your company? Have you wondered what, if anything, you can do to stop it? Break the Cycles one-day workshop, Thriving in the Workplace, is the solution to any bullying that may be impacting the smooth running of your organisation, leading to increased staff turnover. There may be negative PR for your company if it's associated with bullying and nothing is done. For more information about this one-day workshop on workplace bullying, click breakthecycle.org.uk or email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk, or you can call us on 01983 754 666 for an informal chat.
Jewson, the national name with a local heart. We see the 4P's fantastic opportunity for your valuable life skills, and we've passed them by. Congratulations to Vectis Radio for taking this initiative, a truly local community-based radio station. Jewson, the national name with a local heart. Materials. Phone us on 525 111 or look for jewson.co.uk.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the island's local station.
Hello and welcome back to Vectis Radio, Vectis Movies on Vectis Radio 104.6, online at vectisradio.com. And also, well, this show you can get on a podcast afterwards as well. You can either find that through our website or you can find it on iTunes. Now, we are going to continue talking, but first of all, we have a special somebody here with us here in the studio, and that is Zeb. Zeb is pretty much our shall we say our intern?
Our intern.
Hey, intern. Say hi, Zeb.
Our intern,
hi,
I'm asking.
Good evening.
How are you doing, Zeb?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Okay, so Zeb, we've been talking about films, and when we were talking about Ocean's 8, I saw you sort of like nodding along and stuff like that. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen the trailer and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, cool. What film are you looking most forward to in the next while?
I'm not sure yet. I'm looking forward to Infinity Part 2, but that's a while away yet.
All right, cool.
Did you see the trailer? Did you see the Ant-Man trailer?
No, I haven't. That's another one I'm really looking forward to. The first one is brilliant. It's so funny.
All right, cool. Good stuff. Well, thank you for joining us today, Zeb. And just watch how we do it. Watch how the pros do it, and then you'll eventually learn. We make it look easy, but really it's really, really difficult. Last week we said that we were originally going to talk a little bit. We're going to talk about the grey pound silver dollar phenomenon. We said a little bit about that, and as our own silver fox walks past. Yes, Brian Curtis, the silver fox of Vectis Radio.
Electric Eclectic
coming up at 7 p.m. So, but now we are going. But so we're going to talk about these films that the silver dollar, grey pound phenomenon, where they're talking about films that are made specifically or looks like they're aiming for an older audience.
Yeah, you get the feeling that they're marketed, they're made for a mature audience.
Yeah, and we have two films which we're going to talk about now that we saw in the last couple of weeks. So, Sharon, you saw The Book Club.
I did.
Do you tell us what was The Book Club all about?
The Book Club is about a group of four friends who've been friends for 40 years. So they're now approaching, a lot of them have had some work done, shall we say. So we're in the real world, they'd be approaching probably 80. But in this, we're supposed to believe that they're approaching, their mid-60s.
Okay.
But it's like you're and the rest here. But dad, saucer of milk for Sharon in the corner. But there are, yes, it's a group of four friends who've been friends for about 40 odd years. They are Jane Fonda.
Yep.
Candice Bergen.
Yep.
Diane Keaton.
Yep.
And Mary
Steenburgen. Yeah.
And so they've been, their lives have all taken them in different directions. There's like the perennial singleton, Jane Fonda. There's the been married for 40 odd years and, got into a little bit of a sort of fallow period with Mary Steenburgen. There's the divorced and been single for 20 years, Candice Bergen, and not been dating, not been anything.
Yep.
She's just been sort of celibate for 20 years. And then there's recently widowed, but is interested, Diane Keaton.
Okay.
And their friendship has kept them together, but one of their things they've done is they've run a book club once a month. They choose one book and then they meet once a month to discuss it, and they have just a fun, it's just a fun evening, and they decide to read 50 Shades of Grey because their theme for this particular year was books that have been made into films.
Okay.
So you hear, they don't talk about it, but the first film they're talking about is Wild. They never actually mention the book, but when they talk about it, you go, yeah, that's Wild. Hey.
Yeah.
And so then they say, yes, so they go on and they talk about 50 Shades. And because this is a book, obviously, that explores intimacy, they then decide to explore intimacy in their own lives. So, and it almost like takes them in directions other than where they are.
Yeah.
So the perennial singleton who goes from like one sort of casual-ish relationship to another without strings, without ties.
Yep.
Jane Fonda, she sort of hooks up with an old flame and it looks like, she's considering monogamy. Whereas Candice Bergen, who's been single forever, she sort of joins a dating website and looks at, not being monogamous or celibate for a while. And then Mary Steenburgen looks at how to spice up her marriage.
Oh, yeah.
In unconventional ways.
Oh, sorry, I meant, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Diane Keaton, who has two grown-up children who seem to think that she's on the verge of, dementia and frailty, keeps saying to me, you really must move to us. I've got a basement. You can live in the basement where you'll be looked after. We can feed you. We can look after you. And she's going like, I'm not that old. And she meets a new guy, who Andy Garcia, who who wants to sweep her off her feet, and her daughters are sort of like preparing her slippers and her retirement when she's thinking, hey, I can have a little bit of an adventure here.
Yeah.
So you've got these four ladies and their four strands of their lives. And you follow that through the film as they explore elements in the books about intimacy, about fear of commitment and about you know, spicing things up a little bit sexually in their relationships. They sort of explore these things in their own lives.
Well, it sounds like, wait, you're talking about a film that's about ladies reading books that have been turned into films. It sounds like it's right up your alley.
Yeah.
it sounds like
it's the sort of things.
It's like, forget about the Grey Pound. It sounds like this one was made for you.
Yeah, sort of. Ladies who love books.
So what did you think about the film?
I thought it was entertaining to a point.
Okay.
As part of me didn't entirely believe the characters. I found that I was conscious nearly all the way through that these are people acting rather than you completely believe who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And their relationship with each other, I thought it felt a little bit forced at times. I was thinking, oh, you know what, I don't know that these women would be friends for 40 years. Because when I think about my friends who I've had friends for 30 years, and I think, yeah, this the pattern of their relationships doesn't feel like the relationships that I know and I recognise with women friends.
Real.
Yeah, it didn't feel real. So there are elements of it, in fact, a little bit forced. So like with suddenly Jane Fonda, Don Johnson turns up. Because there are nods towards the films as well, obviously. So there's, there's obviously Don Johnson is the father of Dakota Johnson. Who plays the
Anastasia Steele in Fifty Shades of Grey.
And I think there's a couple of other nods as well, to the, like a wink to the camera. So to me, I didn't entirely believe them, and I wasn't entirely convinced by the characters. So that created a little bit of a barrier between me and completely immersing myself in the story and rooting for them. And like some of the relationships, I thought it was quite funny, but not intentional. Because like Diane Keaton, you know, she's sort of quite buttoned up, isn't she? She's always sort of like dressed from like neck to ankle.
Yeah.
And the only part of her you ever see is her face and her hands.
Yeah.
That's it. And then they should have this love scene where she's like in a robe and she's basically got a hat on. She's wearing this fluffy bedstone robe and like she's like canoodling with Andy Garcia, and it's like you can only see about 2 inches of neck here. And she's on like a lilo. I thought, well, how on earth do you get on a lilo with that much on? It just, not that I wanted to sort of go like, oh, just robing for the camera or anything, but I was thinking, really? You have a love scene and you still got more on than most people wear out in the middle of winter.
Oh, you might just have sold me on this.
So that was quite funny.
Because essentially the roll call, because this sounds almost like Sex in the City, the later years.
Yes, it is. I think it was probably aimed at that sort of model.
Yeah, and it's, These are all ladies who I've loved for years, as an act in their own right. I mean, Jane Fonda, Mae Steenburgen, Candice Bergen, Diane Keaton. I've loved them in their own right, and I'm just kind of happy that at least they're getting work.
Yes,
if you get what I mean, I'm happy.
And they are front and center. There's no bones about it. All the men in it are, you know.
Yeah, it's
they're the bird roles in that you'd find in most male films.
I'm still waiting for a film that's going to be balanced and
that doesn't, like
When Harry Met Sally kind of thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to just kind of like, well, men, you've had your time for years, that's and now we're going to treat you exactly the way you treated us.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about what we've been speaking about today, you know, Ocean's 8, Ghostbusters, it's all, you know,
women empowerment. But the men in it are good.
I think I have no problem with women empowerment, but I think it's a bit. It's kind of like when
it doesn't have to be a pendulum, does it? It can be scales that you can balance.
Yeah, you can. There's a way of still having the women be central to it and not just sort of like, you know, relegate all the main characters into, ooh, man, evil.
Or I think like the that. Men, even though their oh, roles man, are much hunk. Lighter, yeah, they are. They are slighter roles. They are still quite good roles. I mean, if you've got Don Johnson, you've got Andy Garcia, you've got Craig T. Nelson,
ooh.
And you've got, his name has gone, Jaws bloke.
Jaws bloke. Oh, Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, wow. Who's?
He was with Candice Bergen.
Oh, right, okay.
Because when you said Jaws bloke, I was like, they're all dead. Oh, no, there's one that's still alive.
I was going to say curly-haired Jaws bloke, but you got
like,
it.
I was like, Robert Shaw, he's gone. But it's all right, cool. How many stars would you give it?
I would give it a 3.
All right, cool.
That sounds good. Candice Bergen.
I like Candice Bergen.
Was she in Soldier Blue?
She was in Soldier Blue, indeed she was.
All right.
Top movie. Sorry, yeah, we need to move on.
We need to rush on. So, Edie.
That's good.
Edie was the film you saw. Yep. What was Edie about?
Edie, basically, she's been looking after her husband, who's been really controlling for 30 years. And then he dies, so he goes to the funeral, and her daughter's talking about home, and she finds his postcard. She's looking through old stuff, not her daughter Edie, and she finds this postcard of her dad, and it's a picture of a mountain in Scotland, and she just decides, she just phones up and says, oh, I'm going to be away for a few days, and she decides she's going to go out and climb this mountain. And so she's an aged old lady, but she decides that's what she's going to do. So she goes up to Scotland, and she basically, she goes to a camping shop, and the people think she's got loads of money, and they try to sell her loads of stuff, but obviously there's a chap that says he's going to help her do it. So off she goes, and she says, look, I want to do this on my own. And they're like, wow, it can get really dangerous up there, get really bad. But anyway, she decides to go off and try and conquer this mountain, because she's seen it in a postcard. She said she wanted to do it, and things happen along the way. As I say, it's probably a movie I wouldn't have gone to see, but there was nothing else about. So I went to see this movie. So yeah, that's basically the story. Old lady hasn't been anywhere, you know.
And
she's
Sheila
not really
Hancock,
loved.
Isn't it?
Sheila Hancock, yeah, Sheila Hancock. Who's very good. But for the movie as a whole, moving on, because I know we haven't got a lot of time, it was an okay movie. Probably some people would really like it. I mean, I haven't read any reviews. I don't know what the critics made of it or whatever. But
so it sounds like you're describing Sunday afternoon,
yeah, the matinee things, which I think, but I could understand the silver dollar crowd, or still, yeah, golden pound or whatever. No, not golden pound, would it
silver,
be?
Silver dollar, grey pound,
yeah. So I could imagine they would really like it. It'd be a nice film to see on TV or Saturday film, but nothing really major exciting happens, you know. Obviously she goes up the mountain, she struggles, and the young guy decides that he's going to go up, and you know.
That's so Kevin Guthrie, isn't it?
Kevin Guthrie, yeah.
Because I liked him in Sunshine on Leith.
And you talk about weaky blokes, because he's due to get married, yeah, with someone, you know, and it's, mm-hmm, obviously, you know, really all he wants to do is probably escape, but he's like, you know, got a real control, and, oh yeah, we're going to get, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do, and he's like, so he quite admires her for doing, and so yeah, so there's a few, you know, there's a little bit of a story there, but didn't really grab me to that effect, but probably some people would enjoy this movie.
How many stars do you give it?
Probably a two.
All right.
Probably a two star.
Okay, yeah, the only other review I've said has pretty much, you just said the only other review I've read of this film.
All right, okay. that's cool then.
You pretty much said it, but I think that's pretty much out of cinemas already, and it's probably coming soon to a Sky Cinema store near you.
Probably will be. How many stars did you give the book club?
A three.
All right, cool. We're going to have another ad break, and we shall be back very soon after these messages.
The White Military and Heritage Museum in Northwood. The museum will excite your senses and immerse you in a world of human success over adversity. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
As a business, you have a legal responsibility to dispose of your waste in line with current government legislation. Island Environmental Hygiene Limited are an island company specialising in the collection of sanitary, clinical and hazardous waste, working closely with the Environment Agency to ensure your waste is disposed of legally. Our services are tailored to meet your needs. To find out more, visit islandhygiene.com or call 721 943.
Squire's Barbershop are the longest serving barbers in Pyle Street. Open from 8:30 till 6:30 Monday to Thursday and until 7 p.m. on Fridays. Saturdays is an early start from 8 till 5. We now have a weekday family special, so you can save yourself pounds. Go and see Jay the Lardy Barber. He's back and ready to cut and style your hair. For a quality focused barbershop serving the local community, it has to be Squire's Barbershop, 68 Pyle Street, Newport. Get in, get trimmed, and go.
This is Vectis Radio, the Isle of Wight's local community station. Vectis Radio was set up on the 23rd of January 2010. We are a community radio station which promotes local businesses, events, charities, and more. The station pays for itself by offering affordable but competitive advertising rates to local companies. For more information, call our sales team on 01983 527 733.
Hey, it's the Rockmeister here. I went to see the management earlier today and said, look, I'm so popular now that I need another night for the rock show. Says the management. Not sure about that. No, I am that popular. Okay, says the management, you can have Wednesday. Ah, oh, great! That's just what needed. Another night, Tuesday, Wednesday and Friday. No, says the management, you can have Wednesday, but not Tuesday. Oh, that didn't work out very well, did it? The Wednesday Rock Show, now 7 through till 10.
Music variety. Music variety. That blows your mind. Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
And we are back with Vectis Movies. We are into the home stretch now. It is almost time for Brian Curtis, who just came and told us that he reckons that his partner... Oh, you're going to be talking 1971 tonight, are you, Brian? Anybody listening to this will probably think, like, you know, I have like an imaginary friend that no one else can hear but me. It's like, oh, Brian, what's that you say, Brian?
Yes, it's 1971 tonight. I'm not in your imagination. You're not, not just in your head.
Oh, thank God for that. I was really beginning to worry.
Is it a festival special?
Well, there wasn't one in 1971.
Oh, there wasn't. Oh, that's that then.
Due to a certain act that was passed by Parliament.
Isle of Wight Act.
Indeed.
Oh, are we going to be hearing about that at 7 o'clock tonight?
Oh, we are indeed.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So 1971 for your hits of facts and great music, especially... are we doing a 2-for-1, 3-for-1, 4-for-1?
Hello, I'm back. Yes, it's a 2 in a row. It's morphed into... 3 or 4 in a row, actually.
Yeah, and this is where you play the same song.
It's Dawn.
Dawn?
Yeah.
Wait, that's the name of the song?
That is the group.
The group. Oh, the group.
Ah, okay. I say knock three times on the ceiling if you want me. That one.
So wait, essentially what Brian does is he takes a song that has been... It's been done by more than one artist and plays the same song back to back by the different artists who've done it.
Oh, wow.
So you can hear the one that you like and the ones that were just not as good as the original.
That's Tony Orlando.
It's like film sequels.
Good point.
Oh, pretty so Tony
much.
Orlando and Dawn will Dawn, be featuring. Okay.
All right,
was
cool.
That the same group that did Tie Yellow Ribbon?
I'm sure, yeah, group. Tony Orlando and Dawn, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, cool.
Sorry, we're talking about music now.
Yeah. 71 was a good year.
this is another section of the show for people who don't like films.
Ah.
Yeah. But the thing is, you never know when it's going to show up, so you have to listen to the whole show to find the bits where we don't talk about films. All right, cool. Now, we're going to talk about Hereditary.
Hereditary, uh-huh.
We're going to talk about Hereditary, which is... we're going to talk about the secret film.
The secret film, yeah. We've got to come to secret film.
Secret film that Sean and I got to see that no one else is going to get to see for a month. So we get to lord it over people for a month going, oh, you want to know what happens? Oh, I could spoil
I've
it for you.
I've already seen it.
Yeah, I've already seen it. I know exactly what happened.
Smugness.
Yeah, the absolute smugness. But okay, so Hereditary.
Hereditary,
now, this is a film that at the moment is... It's just getting a whole bunch of like buzz, and they have things on the poster, and they're saying things which I always think is a bad idea to say, something like this generation's exorcist. I always think of that's like just setting yourself up for a fall. But what did you think of Hereditary?
Okay, basically, quick story. Obviously a matriarch of the family has died, and mm-hmm. then her daughter starts to, you know, to sort of say how bad her mother was. It goes like that, moves down. She's got a daughter and a son, and then once the mother's died, all strange things sort of happening.
Yep.
And they start happening, then it all goes a bit mad, and there's supposed to be a bit of a twist. So The Exorcist, this is not, I'm hate to say, this was, it started off, I must say that it started off pretty good. I thought, this is really, really interesting. It was in the Babadook sort of thing, you know, very psychological, more psychological than
supernatural.
And then just supernatural. And then it just, after about the first 20 minutes, just went into every cliche you could possibly think of, and some really, really stupid stuff. So I was like, I've been waiting so long to see something that is scary, or at least interesting, but this had every horror cliche you could possibly think of. No, it wasn't jumpy. It was nothing. It really, really fell down. So I must say that total disappointment on this film, and probably something that I would never even consider watching again.
Oh, what a shame. Was there a creaking door?
There was all sorts. The last 10 minutes was just like, what? Where is this going? How? Without going to see it, you know, some real, like, bizarre things happening.
Did someone die and then not die? They popped up again?
Yeah, someone died. They were cultists, and it was all, you know, all this thing, and happened to be little books that popped up, which were trying to give you information on stuff. You totally wouldn't have liked it, I don't think, Sharon. But anyway,
if they mess around with books, certainly not.
Yeah, well, you know, those old spell books with like the pentagrams,
the grimoires, and all that,
and all the little creatures and all that, and kings, ancient kings, and ancient demons, and all stuff like that, and of course, all this thing. I don't know what it was trying to be. I don't know if it was trying to be The Shining. I don't know if it was trying to be Rosemary's Baby. It seemed like it didn't really know where it wanted to go, you know.
Yep.
It was supposed to be. You could see, well, there's a little Shining bit there, you know. You've got some corridors, you've got some stuff. There's a bit of Rosemary's Baby in there in other things. And it was just such a mishmash of stuff. Sorry. I was really, really annoyed, disappointed.
Because I hear that this doesn't go for the kind of jump scare kind of horror. No. It tries to go for more the sort of, like, what's the word?
Sinister?
No. The sort of, like, atmosphere.
Atmosphere.
Atmosphere of just dread. Atmosphere of just something is wrong or something like that.
Well, it doesn't do that at all.
Did you have high expectations before you saw it?
Yes, I did.
Do you think that was a disadvantage because of...
I don't think so, because like I say, the first 20 minutes it started off fairly well, and I thought, oh, this is really interesting, this looks like, you know, more psychological than horror, because I think sometimes those psychological movies where you never really know if it is something or if it's just in someone's mind, yeah, or you know, those, I mean, The Innocents, yeah, I keep going back to this film, The Innocents. Remember The Innocents with Deborah Kerr, 63 film, which is totally about a governess that, well, it's based on the book, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's based on the book.
Turn of the Screw.
And it's a governess. And if anyone wants to see it, it's a black and white film, but you never really know. All this stuff happens, and she sees things and she hears things, but you never know if it's in her mind or if it's actually real, or whether she's just making this up because of circumstances and things that happen. And I think a film like that is really good, whereas this just falls into the realm of, you know, trying to be clever, but not really being clever at all, just being silly. And as I say, I won't give a spoiler because some of you might want to see it, but there's one bit at the end that's just like, I actually looked around, because sometimes I look around to see the audience's reaction.
Yep.
And they were all going, you could see the puzzle on people's faces, is why is that happening now? You know, what point is that, you know? And it just, it's like, I don't know, you just think, oh, that's going on. Someone pulling that. You could almost feel that there was people pulling and pushing and prodding, and it just didn't look. It just looked silly and stupid.
Okay, I have to admit, I did see the one person I know who's seen this film told me that they finished watching the film, and in the film they were like, "What did I just watch?"
Yeah,
and it's all right, cool. Okay, bear in mind that I think whenever Sean goes off for one, I always have to be like, okay, cool,
but
this is Sean, and we know Sean is really, really up on his things that happen in the film, and oh my god, where's the logic kind of stuff like that. So it's it is a bit of a shame.
What did your friend think of it?
They thought it was scary, but they also thought it was confusing. Yeah. They weren't entirely sure what was going on.
As I say, I think it was trying to be too many things, and you know, there were elements of lots of other things, and I think it was just trying to be too clever. Whereas, you know, it could have, if they'd kept it as it was the first 20 minutes, I think it would have been quite a good movie.
Oh, and by the way, sorry, for my friend Haley from Doris Pink's Florists. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Oh.
All right, cool. Now, so how many stars?
I was going to say, do you want me to give it a star rating? One.
One.
Oh. One star for me.
Oh, good lord.
I'm going to see that. I don't read reviews before I go to see a movie, but I have looked at reviews since, because I thought, you know, some people can't like it. And if you look at most reviews on IMDb, especially the reviews, it's like one star. What the hell did I do? Why have I gone and seen this movie? It was like, you know, there's quite a lot.
Okay, now this is going to be interesting, because it sounds like it's a person-critic split. Because almost every critic I've read about it, all the reviews I've read about it, have been like, oh my god, amazing, great, oh, so it's atmospheric, all that. But like, all the people...
I don't think Kermode was...
Okay, I haven't seen what he said. But this makes me want to watch this film now. Because I wonder whether it's going to be like a Marmite thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, no, it'd be interesting because Mother. I mean, you.
Yeah, like.
Did you like?
I like Mother.
Yeah, I love Mother.
Mother was in my top five films of last year.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was thinking Mother because Mother, you had a whole bunch of people going, "What was this bunch of rubbish?"
Yeah, yeah.
And all the critics were like, "Oh my god, best film of the year."
Yeah.
And then, but then again, the other half of the critics were like, "Oh my god, worst film of the year."
What a mess. Yeah, I know. It's just a personal choice, but. I don't think I've been scared at a movie in years. I don't think I've seen one horror movie in recent years.
I was going to ask you if there was a film you would say in the last 20 years, possibly,
not
that you would say
years.
Was... Would you say, what about The Ring or The Grudge, those sort of things? Would they, give you...
You see, I think there's, jeeps. Like, suspense, and then there's just, like, schlock horror. Well, no, that's not really schlock horror, but, yeah, I mean, they're okay, but I don't think they're particularly scary, you know?
Because I know The Ring, when I saw that, freaked me out.
Did it really?
Yeah, I hated it.
The films, two films... There's a, as I say, that I think give me the creeps. And I don't know if it was because I was younger back then, but I've watched them since, and I thought, yeah, it's a really good movie. Was The Innocents for some reason?
Yeah.
The Innocents, you know, the bit of the gardener in the window, and there's a film with Ray Milland, old film. I think it has been remade, called The Uninvited, which I think is I know it's a film I saw. It's been remade. I'm sure there's a film called The Uninvited, and that was pretty creepy. That gave me the creeps. But no, in recent years, there's nothing. Perhaps I'm just getting too old. But
that wasn't the one that was remade with Colin Farrell. And
yeah, it's been remade, yeah.
With Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman. And
that's
the
one,
guy
Nicole Kidman.
In the school.
No, that was The Beguiled.
That's
The
Beguiled.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this was...
That was Clint Eastwood in the original.
Yeah. Ray Milland was in this film. I remember Ray Milland. But I haven't seen that for years, but I think that was a black and white one. I think, funny enough, I think black and white works with...
Would
sinister film with some film.
Yes,
I think
can
so.
Work.
Creates an atmosphere of its own, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it really, really does.
I wonder if Zeb has ever seen any black and white films, because I know some younger people just will not even give black and white films.
Well, they'll be like, oh, black and white.
Yeah, black and white. Yeah, I'm not watching black and white movies. So I'm going to ask Zeb, have you seen any black and white films?
I've sort of seen a few, not many, sort of Vivre et Savier. It's a French film with Jean-Luc Godard. I've seen Sunrise, A Song of Two Humans. That was 1927.
Okay.
Clips of Nosferatu.
All right, okay, so some silent stuff.
Proper old school stuff.
Okay, fine. I didn't even know what those were.
Yeah, but I was going to say there's a bit confusing. They're sort of arty films. You need to see some. But do you find that a lot of people in your age group with black and white films, they don't seem to...
I don't think there's so much of an appeal for it now, because a lot of people get immersed with the colour, especially
the richness,
just the aesthetic quality of it. You want to feel like you're there and you want to relate to all parts of it, and I feel like people just aren't interested in that. They want to move forward in the modern era.
I mentioned you're making me feel old.
Okay, cool. Right, so now we've done with that. Now we need to get onto our secret film.
We do, secret film.
We've been promising this the whole show, secret film. So, I know Sean, Sharon, and I don't know about you, Zeb. We all have Cineworld Unlimited cards. And every now and then, they send you something and they say there's going to be a secret screening. And this is a film that you do not know what it is, but you've got to book in. Go there, show your Unlimited card. You get there, you sit down. They go through the whole thing of playing the adverts, the endless adverts. Did you get a free bottle of Pepsi when you went into the cinema?
Yeah, but it was Pepsi Max, and I don't do... I don't do Maxi Maps. I was like, well... I don't mind the odd Coke now and again, but it's got to be a straight Coke.
But I was like, hey, it's free. So,
you took one. So, I could have given it to someone, I guess. I could have taken it and given it to someone.
I was like, hey, it's free. So I took it and I went in anyway. And so you go in there, you watch the whole thing and everything. And then they start showing the trailers for this. And we sat down there and I'm thinking, okay, this trailer's what's going on. They show the trailers for a film called Patrick that has Jennifer Saunders and someone called B.T. Edmondson, who I think might be her daughter, in it. They show the trailer for... Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. So I was thinking, oh, these are also like female centric, so maybe we're going to see a film that's coming up that's going to be very female centric. And then the card comes up at the beginning that says, the British Board of Classification will like to certify, blah, blah, blah. And there's this
gasps. There's gasps. There was gasps in the cinema.
There were audible gasps throughout the cinema. And I was actually looking down, and I heard these gasps when I looked up at the screen to say the British Board of Film Classification would like to certify that Incredibles 2.
And
so we end up watching. So Sean and I last night, in two different... I was in Southampton, you were in the island, watched Incredibles 2, which is not out for until the 15th of July.
23rd, isn't it? I thought I saw it on the papers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw the... You know, like the banners that they have as you come out. I'm pretty sure I looked at that because I was like, I was quite pleased. I thought, yeah. But I could be wrong. I thought it said 23rd of July.
Okay, cool.
It's July anyway.
It's in July. It's a month early. Yeah, and so all of you people have Sean and I gloating for a month.
Smug.
For a month. And we're just going to threaten to spoil it for you, but all you need to know is it is good.
It is good.
Yeah. And it even has a car chase that I think even Sean would like in it. All right, cool. I think that's all that we have time for today. And so we just have to say goodbye. Thank you very much. We shall see you next week.
Yes, goodbye. Enjoy the festival.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, enjoy the festival. Yeah, no, that thing.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. It's rain.